right, Ron Romano back on the podcast. Ron, thank you so much for coming back on the show.
Oh, so excited to be here, Matt. Thanks so much for having me back on, man.
Of course. Now, people may already know you because we were on the show years ago, but that's not why they might know you. You have a thriving Instagram thing going on over there. You are just crushing it. You're really like a man of the people for sure. You have a really interesting podcast as well. So I really appreciate you coming on today. This isn't going to be like the interview, tell me about your life podcast. We've already done that one. So people should go check that out. I think it was like in 2021. I think it was like right in the throes of COVID at that point. But today I want to talk about so many topics, but we are, shoot, man, like 4 weeks away? 4 weeks away from Boston?
Yeah. Hell yeah, man. Shipping up to Boston, man.
You're wearing this shirt right now.
Oh, yeah, man. You know, I got so many of them in the closet. This is it a number? Yeah, number 12. 11 in the bank, so number 12. So, yeah, it's been a long time, Matt. 1995 was my first. And, my God, if I close my eyes and just try to imagine what a starting line looked like back then in 1995... And we talked a little about technology before we actually turned the record button on. Man, has the world changed. I mean, we didn't have iPhones. We didn't have instant connections to each other or texting. And the race tracking may have possibly started then, but it wasn't anything like it exists today. So, I mean, so much has changed. And, of course, super shoes and gels and performance fuels and God knows how many other modalities to kind of keep us healthy and running. So yeah, the world's changed a lot since then.
For sure. And we are in World Abbott Marathon season, right? We just had Tokyo, we got Boston coming up, and then we got London. And so when I think about the Abbott World Marathon Majors, one of the people that I think first about is you, because this is something that you have made a life of, going to these, and not only that, but also really engaging with people, answering questions, and just really being a part of the conversation, not just in terms of the what you've brought to the table, but listening to what other people have brought to the table, and really being a part of that. When you are thinking about this, you know, basically like this 2 month span, right, of Tokyo and then Boston and then London, what are some of the things that really come to your mind first when you're looking at that window of time?
Well, first off, thanks for recognizing that, because that means a lot. That's kind of more or less become my mission statement in life, is helping to educate people that really don't understand maybe how to get into all these majors and what are the different avenues available to them. And if they're not capable, maybe just with their body type and their running history and maybe not having enough time in, maybe this Boston is something that's just impossible for them. And, you know, not just as a podcaster, but as a coach, like we can only do so much from where we are now versus like where we might want to get to. But a lot of it that just brings me great joy is like helping people understand the process, like taking out the mystery behind, okay, I can get into these pretty easily, but how would I get into that one or the other one? How many a year is a good amount or a safe amount for a runner based on their running history? How many miles have they been running? What's their body like? How does it handle distance and all that good stuff? But for me, I don't know, you were a college athlete. I was a college baseball player. Running, to me, has become a calendar year sport, the way baseball or football or basketball. You were a hoops player. I was baseball. So, and baseball's a much longer season. It's double of what professional basketball would be, or even like an NCAA season. But for me, it's like a whole year, right? I mean, it isn't 12 months, as we know, because it's three in that one period of time and three in the back end. And you got that middle area where you could totally recoup and rebuild and maybe treat injuries or get stronger, work on PT. It's just, the juices get flowing, man. You know, when it starts to come around to that time of the year, I get so excited. And, you know, seeing these people, you know, at these races, it keeps me young, man. You know, it's really fun.
Yeah, the excitement of it is really something that I want to touch on here, because for a lot of people, going to one of these races could end up being a once in a lifetime experience, right? And whether they qualified for the race or they're in the lottery at London or they're fundraising, especially if you're in a lottery situation or you're a fundraising situation, it's hard to do more than once, right? So it really does get tricky. So for people who are going to once in a lifetime opportunity situation, you kind of have this odd mix of you want to make the most of the weekend, but you also want to make the most of the race. And that is such a tricky thing to be able to kind of manage that middle ground.
It's a tremendous point. And I think it's one of the things I like to talk about the most. So I try to use Instagram Live as a great venue to reach more of those people, because even if 50 people are actually on their screens, you know, when we're having a conversation like that, we know that 5,000, 10,000, 20,000, maybe even 50,000 people might eventually look at that video on Boston Course Strategy. But what I'm finding that has more traction is like talking about Tokyo and all these areas of concern, because the race is just so different. And of course it's different. It's in Japan. It's far away as you can travel from here, from us in the New York City area, the East Coast area of the country. You're flying 14, 15 hours. Of course the rules are going to be different. And people have this idea, Matt, which really cracks me up, because it's the Abbott Majors, right? So they're all in this six-star series. Well, I don't know why anybody thought that because it's sponsored by Abbott that somehow these races are going to be the same. The courses aren't the same. The title sponsors of the races aren't the same. The time of the year of the races aren't the same. The distance is the only common thread, right? Whether it's measured at 26.2 or 42.2, and even going to Tokyo, you have mile markers at 1, 5, 10, 15, 20, 25. But in between, you don't see mile markers. You're seeing kilometers. In London and in Berlin, you're seeing mostly kilometers. You'll see some mile splits. But these are all like little things you just have to alert yourself to and prepare, because if you're pacing, to your point, most of my friends have been trying to get a six-star for 13 years. Matt, that's probably an average number, 10 to 13 years. And you're right. If they're going to raise 15 or 20 grand for a Boston bib, or in London, it's significantly less raising money there. I would say London, you could probably get on with any good fundraiser in the 3,000 to 5,000 range, which is a lot less than Boston. But you're right. If you're going to go over there and it's a family experience and you're taking your children, you want to make sure you're in a good location, either by the start
or the
finish.
You need to fundraise just for the travel. Just for the travel expenses.
There. Or you better get yourself a new credit card that has some serious loyalty rewards points, man. Because, hey, it's going to cost you. I know how much it costs me traveling Han Solo. So I don't want to think about my friends that brought their three kids to Tokyo or two kids to Tokyo. Some of them were there 20 days, 18 days. God bless. Because that's the way to do it, right? But I think it's just super fun. If I can fill in gaps for people that are really nervous, that have so much anxiety, maybe even that they're going to get swept off the course in Tokyo. Like, hey, it's not as bad as you think. This is what you're going to be facing. Prepare for that. Practice your long runs like that. And then you're going to get to the race day and it's not going to be as difficult, because you're going to have all the adrenaline and all the people out there. So, yeah.
Yeah, and one of the things that is a hallmark of some of these bigger races, and this is not just germane to the Abbott World Marathon Majors, is, and we're going to say Abbott a lot here, Abbott is not sponsoring the show. Any medical devices that I'm using, believe me, I'm paying for. Probably as I get older, it's more and more, I should say, as well. Is, again, these big marathons, part of this thing is managing the morning, right? So New York is a great example, right? You're a New York City guy. Like, just getting to the starting line feels like a marathon to some degree, right? In terms of, like, you have to wake up so darn early. It's good luck sleeping in the first place. And then you have all the rigmarole getting just to the starting line. Again, every race is going to be its own little cup of tea here, but something similar to that in that regard. So how do you advise people on how to manage their emotions of the morning so that they're not going to the starting line already exhausted?
Great question again. I think like that conversation is going to differ wildly based on someone's experience, based on how they are around crowds of people. One thing that I share all the time, and people are always like, are you sure you can take Uber in New York City? And I'm like, I've taken Uber to the starting line of New York City the last 7 races. So I know you can. Now, most people may not be aware of it. Now, if you happen to be coming from the Jersey side and you don't have to go through the bridges that way and go across the Verrazano that way, I mean, it's way easier to come through Staten Island or come that way and get over to Fort Wadsworth and be easily dropped off. So if I'm talking to somebody who's not really good in crowd situations and they're worried about getting on that bus or in line with so many people on the ferry and getting smashed into and bumped into, if I know I got a person with anxiety like that, I'm telling them, look, I want you up at whatever time you want to eat your breakfast and do your stuff. I want you out in front of your hotel at this time at 5:15 in the morning, and your Uber is picking you up at 5:15, because I've done it from the Trump Hotel right there by Central Park West. You know, it's obviously right there as we enter the park by Columbus Circle. I mean, I've not only made it way ahead of when the bridge is going to get closed down, but I frequently beat my friends who've left 30 minutes earlier and took the bus, and that's fine. But Matt, I'm 63, dude. I've been doing this a long time. I see tons of people at the expo. I get all the hugs. I do all the selfies. I go to all the Tracksmith stuff. I love shakeouts. You know, if you were doing something and you invited me, hell yeah, I'd come by and say hi. I meet your crew of people. You guys are awesome. But there's only so much you can do with that time, right? Because you talked about how you're going to divide it. So I tell people all the time, do you want to go to a shakeout with 500 people? Do you want to go to a shakeout with 200 people? Or is it me? Are you better served maybe to just go to a smaller one like O'Leary Racing Team? Brendan O'Leary is a good friend of mine. I know you're really tight with James McCurdy. So, and I'm not saying James's is a smaller one, but it's certainly not at the size of some of these things where they're not an event. They're more like a race. And, you know, it's kind of a little bit crazy. But if that's what you're there for, go. You know, go with God and enjoy the experience. But if you're there to run a PR, if you're there to run a BQ, if you're there to maybe take your running to the next level, I'm going to advise you very differently in terms of like how you should parcel out your time. You know, I'm not, everybody's going to be on their feet, Matt. There's no way. You're doing right. shows. You're live at these races. It's impossible. And we're going to be walking a lot of miles. That's a fact. But just don't run too much, man. You know, run 5K, you know, throw a couple of surges in there to feel like marathon pace and check out, man. You know, the rest of the time, be on your feet just walking around, and you've run enough miles. You don't need to be running 30 miles over the weekend for the race, you know. Just roll up and save your energy for race day.
All right, so I'm this is going to be like a smorgasbord of questions, because I have a million questions, and there's going to be no rhyme or reason to some of these. I'll just hit up one that is always a question, and it's going to be a question for the next 4 weeks, and people are going to start checking their apps as soon as they can. They're checking them now, even though it doesn't mean anything, and it's going to be Boston weather tracking, right? So, like, you probably, at this point, after, like, 28 years or so of going to Boston, you probably should have just gotten a meteorological degree. Because it would have served you as well as like basically anything else in terms of Boston prep, knowing the pitfalls of that race and just the changes that can happen even 36 hours before the start. So when people are thinking they're a month out, the bulk of their training is probably already done, at least I would hope so. But obviously the weather stuff is something that, again, is going to change and things like that. What would you advise people 1 month out in terms of how to manage the potential weather situation, either in their current training and or preparing for that day? So again, assuming that, say, they don't live in the New England, the Boston area, so they're not driving to the race, they're packing up, they're getting on a plane, and then they're kind of making it happen.
A bunch of important considerations. For one thing, New England weather, finicky, fickle. Give me any of your fun F words. But one thing we've learned, and this is a book that I made from 2018. You know, it's the year of what we call the perfect storm. I dubbed it the perfect storm because it's one of my favorite movies. And it just was the perfect title for what the conditions were that we raced in that day. For anybody that ran in that race, took part in it, finished it, didn't finish it, had to step off, got hypothermia and all the above. If I can remember one thing, that entire race weekend, we were being told we were going to have 30 mile per hour tailwinds, like the year Ryan Hall crushed it and ran the crazy time. And I was like, ooh, 30 mile an hour tailwinds. This sounds really cool. And it was Friday and they were saying it, and it was Saturday. And sometime around Saturday night, the report started saying the rain was always forecast. That wasn't changed. That the direction of the wind flips a complete 180, and we go from running with a 35 mile an hour tailwind to running into a headwind. And of course, it wasn't 35 miles an hour blowing the entire time, but it certainly got up that high or higher, and it probably averaged 15 or 20 miles an hour for the whole run. Not to mention getting pelted with the coldest rain in history, and every bottle, every cup on the nutrition tables is blown over. So
I didn't even think about that. You know, of all the conversations I've had, that's never come up before. That's amazing.
Well, I can tell you, Matt, of all my friends who got hypothermia, and I did, I ended up in there with like a 92 point something, almost 93 body temperature. And I had friends who were lower. So not like it's a contest to win. You don't want to win that contest. That's one you want to lose on purpose. But I think what led to the hypothermia was not how many layers people had on, not the clothing choices they made, or if they wore a surgical cap or all this other stuff where people say, that's why I ended up okay. I think the body cannot run 26.2 miles at race pace. You want to run a training run? You can run with coffee and nothing else, or plain water, no gels, no matter what anybody tells you. I've done it many, many times. But a race is very different, and it's not racing 10K pace or half marathon pace, but still, marathon pace or around that pace for that long a duration, whether it's 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours, you're going to deplete all your glycogen. You're going to run low on reserves. And if you're not getting any hydration on the other end, and when every water cup is blown over in Gatorade cup, and trust me, I don't even know that there were any standing at any point. Second, our hands were so frozen. When I tried to open the gels, pretty much dropped every single one of them, Matt. At some point, I just gave up because my hands were so cold and so frozen. I was like, okay, there goes another gel. Maybe I should go back and get it. And I'm like, I'm not going back and running an extra two blocks in a 50-mile-an-hour wind. No thanks. I'll skip the gel. So I can't estimate how many people that affected, but it was a lot. And again, if you were banking on trusting a weather forecast, forget about 3 weeks before. These people start posting stuff on Facebook, I just die. I'm like, the only thing I can tell anyone is you don't go to any race. I don't care if you're going to London, you're going to Tokyo, you're going to any one of these majors, you pack a quality raincoat, okay? Gore sponsors me and sends me some gear. I'm very lucky to have that relationship with them. And no one makes a better waterproof, you know, rain jacket that is super lightweight that you could literally wear under your singlet, Matt. You could pop a singlet right over the top of it, have that on, zipped up. It has a hood if you want to put the hood on. It has pockets in there where you could actually get into and reach gels. But you would basically be guarding or protecting yourself against a condition day like that. And I would give anything to go back and run that Boston race over. Look at me. I got my Zenza, you know, ankles, calf sleeves and arm sleeves. But this was a whole manipulated outfit. None of this was truly like cold weather gear. I wasn't prepared back then. I didn't have that stuff in 2018. But I made it. And so did so many other people. So your checklist, your packing, gloves are always common. Hats are common. Different kind of weighted hats. You might need a cold weather hat, a fleece hat or some sign. So what do you want to do? You want to get to the race expo and hunt for these things or just pack a little extra luggage and take it and be prepared, be a Boy Scout, right? Or a Girl Scout, whichever you prefer. And, you know, just have your stuff, be prepared for the day.
I love it. And the way you ended that soliloquy was great. Is that, and you made it, right? So you have the situation where it's so easy to spend a lot of time and mental energy running through all of the possible scenarios and then this weather and then this weather and then that. But ultimately, even in that situation, which you described, which is an absolutely crazy one, you still got through it, right? So I think the idea is we don't want to completely go overboard. We want to be prepared, but we don't want to cross the line into like really going overboard in terms of all the, you know, the mental rigmarole that could send us spiraling down this path, because there's no way you could literally keep going, right? There's no logical conclusion, because at some point you're being almost illogical in completely obsessing over it.
You're right on. And people, once they start to go down that dark hole, they just tend to sink further in. And again, that's just the joy I get is if, like at Tokyo, I kept meeting people at the finish line. And then I wasn't even having any announced meetings. My hotel was right there. So I stayed at the Palace Hotel, which is an amazing property across from the Imperial Gardens. And I was just like, hey, I'm going to be around. I'm going to be around by the finish line. If you're around, stop over, say hi. And people would come up, hey, are you around? Runs over? Yeah, it's me. Come on, I'll walk you back to the last 1K. I'll show you where the final turn is. And here's where the finish is. Here's the cobblestone street. And, you know, what else do you want to know about the course? And, you know, I'd spend 15, 20 minutes in each one of them. And you see them go from like this, fist clenched, nerves, worried, to all of a sudden you see them start to smile a little and relax. And I'm like, hey, give me a follow on my page. Send me a DM. You got questions? I can't promise you I'll be able to get back to you because I do get a lot of messages. But if I see it, I'll try to get back to you and help you out. Good luck. You're going to be good. And then so many of those people pinged me after the race or wrote a comment on my thing. Like, I saw you at the finish line, or I saw your IG live, or I did an event with a custom performance, a physical therapy place in the city that's amazing. And I was one of their three experts just talking about Tokyo. And, you know, these people, Matt, they're so appreciative. And look at all the content that you put out with your guys with Relay and just your own shows. I mean, you know how much people appreciate the advice. You're also a coach. So if you can help somebody take away some anxiety, that's a good feeling, man. A really good feeling.
I love all this. And we can keep talking about this nonstop. I do want to ask you, though, with the potential, I don't know if it's potentially more, maybe it's like now science sealed and delivered, but this is not necessarily going to be a 6-star adventure anymore. We're looking down a 7-star. So what's that like for you?
Yeah, I think Abbott has spoke to this, like World Marathon Majors has spoke to this. And I think people pick and choose what info they want to receive, Matt. You must know this. I mean, every day I'm like, okay, they made a clear-cut statement that there's not going to be a 7-star right now, that they're going to add some, augment the program in some way and maybe add some gates or some other things. But they've said right out, we're not adding a 7-star. They said Sydney is 100% through phase one. It looks 100% like they're going to make it all the way. I also think South Africa has a great chance to make it too. This isn't going to end at 7 or 8. Who knows? I mean, to me, you'll see them in South America. They're going to want to touch every continent. I mean, I don't blame them. That's what I would want to do. But the award program itself, I don't know what they'll do with that. Maybe they'll just have.
So are you saying it's going to stay at 6, but we'll just rotate the sites in a sense?
I think that, you know, from what I've heard, and I'm pretty plugged into that group, it's not changing even after Sydney gets it. Like maybe a year or two beyond that, they might start changing it. Look, they're aware of how anxious people are that are in this cycle, right? Again, I'd say my average friend's time frame to earn one is so many. Three women I train with and run with, one's been on the IG Live for Tokyo, 13 years. That was all three of them. And they weren't all really close in the beginning. They kind of met in the middle of this somewhere, living and doing training runs and finding out, oh, okay, I did New York and Boston, or let's do London, or how do we get in? And so I think they're really aware of that. And I don't think they want to cause like a huge disruption to people that maybe have earned it. Like for me, I have 3 6-stars. They can't take them away from me. If they want to make a 7-star or a 9-star, good, cool. Like, I'm down with that, you know? I mean, there's other things, too. I mean, I've so many of my races of my 78 marathons, 37 are the majors, you know? So it's literally almost 50-50. But I've run plenty of other marathons around the world, and I want to run more. I want to do 7 continents. But I love the organization of these races. I love the fact that people are chasing a common goal. What our why is and why we're out there and what drives us to get out of bed or do our work after work or in the middle of the day or in the morning, that's wildly different, as you know, as a coach. But that what we're chasing may be like symbolic, right? It's kind of a quest. Let's go on the Frodo quest. Let's get the one ring, except it's the 6-star ring, whatever you want to call it. But it's just fun, but it isn't cheap. It isn't easy. And it takes a lot of work. Physically training, and you know, people have families and obligations and kids and sports, and you know, your kids are younger. I mean, my son is 26 years old now. I had a 9-year break coaching all his travel baseball teams. I wouldn't trade any of that stuff for the world. I mean, I may have lost some running years that I could have been in my prime, let's say. I wouldn't trade any of that for anything. When I came back to running after that 9 years, I was still running the whole time. I just wasn't doing any races, not even like a local 5K, because how can you do a race when every weekend you have travel baseball and you got doubleheaders? When are the races? On the weekend. So, you know, it wasn't going to work out. And I got brought back into the fray when he wanted to run in high school for cross country at Regis. So that brought me back in. So I was lucky for that.
I love it. Yeah. So have you run Sydney?
I have not run Sydney. I'm
so this is exciting
this
for you, right? So this is like, very you probably exciting. Do this as like, hey, this is exciting. A new opportunity, a new race, a new continent. Here we go.
100%. And I'm a huge travel guy. I mean, I think I love travel almost as much as I love running. I mean, the experience of exploring cultures and food and language and just, you know, seeing the architecture, just seeing it all on foot. Exploring and not having a plan and just winging it is kind of my favorite thing. Because people always go, like, what are you going to do when you get to Tokyo? I'm like, I don't know. I'll figure it out. But message me when you hit the ground and let's see. Well, our paths could cross. And, you know, good things always happen. And there's times when I really like plan something through. But I've got a lot of really, you know, good friends that I met on this running journey. Like Lisa Waitman, the pro in Australia, I've had on my show a bunch of times. And if you haven't had her on, you should absolutely have her on. Because I know we've had a lot of the same guests over the time, because it's just normal, you know, to either be talking to pros or like elite amateurs, or even just an amateur whose running might be considered, you know, not really outstanding from like a time or a performance perspective, but they've done something really exceptional in overcoming cancer or drugs or alcohol or God knows what other, you know, challenges in life. And to me, those stories are the ones that are really the most interesting and really stick at the end of the day. And they really like kind of galvanize people. You know, people are like, well, that's my story. You know, I went through this, or, you know, I had issues with that. I went through those kind of challenges. But Sydney's going to be a hoot. And I can't wait to set foot on the Australian continent. And I don't know if I could get away without popping over to New Zealand, just because, you know, you're right there as far as, you know, in that same, you know, time zone, if you will, or close enough, you know, maybe a little bit different, but I can't wait. I'm super excited, and it's going to be great. It's the world age group championship, so that'll be super. So you'll get some amazing competition, and some people are running that in Berlin the following week, and, you know, I can't say anything about that because I've done all that crazy shit. You know, I've done Boston and London 6 days apart, and, you know, this year, the year of the perfect storm, London was 6 days later, and that was the year it was 80 degrees in London. Now, it didn't hit 80 till like late in the race, but, you know, we never know what we're going to get with weather,
it's,
man.
It's not
you
like
just
it went from,
deal with it.
Yeah, it didn't hit 80 till late in the race, but it didn't go from like 52 to 80, right? It was,
you're right.
It was building. So did you do the, and I should know this, but, you know, sometimes you forget things. Did you do the Chicago-Boston double in 21?
I did not, just because that particular year, there were some.
And for people who don't remember, I should have introduced this better. They were the same weekend. This was when Boston got moved to the fall. So all of a sudden they were the same weekend. Yes.
Sunday, Monday. And you obviously followed Shalane, you know, when she did them all that year. And officially she's not a 6-star finisher because Tokyo was a virtual race. And that's just the way it is. I'm glad that Abbott treats it that way. But I felt bad for Shalane because she would have gone to Tokyo if she could have. She would have ripped it over there. But I have a good friend, you know, Stephanie, who's a pilot, doctor, and she was on my show that weekend, Matt. So she went to Chicago. She was freaking running through the airport, you know, like O.J. Simpson style, like hurdling people, going through the counters, makes it to Boston. I don't know if her brother, somebody had coordinated with Boston to get her bib. She gets up the next morning, runs the race, then comes over to the Four Seasons with me on Boylston and does a podcast that afternoon. And she's got more energy than you and me right now. And I'm just like, God bless you. I love it. You're the best. And it was just a hoot. But obviously, there were a pretty good number of people that did that crazy Chicago Sunday, Boston Monday.
I'll tell you what, they should have just got together and got a private jet. They should have just come together and got a private plane. So they knew for sure they have to worry about, like, all right, what about the delays or whatever? Again, I know this is an expensive idea, but, you know, if you get like 50 people to come together and split the cost, I wonder if it really would have been better.
I think it would have been a super cool marketing idea, but, you know, like we're all kind of doing our own, you know, who's staying at this hotel and who's that? Like, a lot of it is that stuff too.
Can
who's
you imagine if Nike had done that? They'd done Air Nike and they had Shalane on it.
Genius. Come on, man. There's so many marketing opportunities like that. If somebody's really watching it close, like, come on, this is a natural. This is an easy one. It's a layup. Look at all the pro golfers. I mean, they made the private jet service what it is. I mean, I'm not saying actors and major CEOs weren't doing the travel life and doing the private jet life, but I mean, it's all the golfers, man, that are traveling around the world playing these events. They're the ones that were rolling with the jets more than anybody and just made it like way more mainstream for sure.
For sure. All right. So let's talk about your running. So one of the things that people love to go to you for is all the information that we talked about and so much more. Your show was really good. You talked to really interesting people. Again, we've had some of the same people on, right? So I know these people pretty well. And one of the things, if not the main thing, that people gravitate towards in you, in your profile, your shows, your Instagram, all that, is your running journey, because you're a man who's a master's runner. You mentioned before, 9 years off from competition, I guess, how we should put it. But you're one heck of a runner. You've been a really good runner for a really long time. And this is something that I want to talk to you about, just about what you have learned, specifically say, you can set the timeline here, but maybe in the last 5, 8, 10 years that has allowed you to just do so well. I mean, you are a fantastic master's runner. You have been for a long time. And it's something that, while it's something that other master's runners would love to hear, I think it's also something that people of any age can benefit from.
Well, thank you for the compliment. Much appreciated. And Polly, who was a guest on your show first and then on mine, was it Mommy to Sub 3, I think is her Insta. You had a great show with her, and then she was on mine a couple of weeks after. Polly was like writing me in Tokyo, so when are you going to do your own show and interview yourself? I go, oh, that really wouldn't be any fun. And I said, well, you could come on my show and interview yourself. I think she's going to be happy that, you know, she was on your show and on my show, so she'll get to hear this chat. But I think there's a couple of things that come to mind. First, Boston was 1995, just to kind of start like first leg of the journey, and then to kind of push it over to the second side. you know, like 35, 36 years old. Those were my prime running years, but I had only started running in my 30s. I was a college baseball player, really hadn't found a sport to keep my interest level. You know, you could play in basketball leagues, right? Or you could play in tennis tournaments and maybe not be a Division I college first singles player, but there's local tournaments you can play to kind of push yourself. And I didn't want to be one of those beer drinking college ex-Division I baseball players who ended up with a beer gut. So I was like, I got to find something that like gets me going. And I loved running for all my sports. So I got into it and very quickly found that I had some like ability here and just loved to train. And the more I trained and the more mileage I put in, the stronger I got. So first Boston 95 is the 99th Boston Marathon. So we're at 128, Matt. And 96, my second one, is the 100th. So for people that talk about times, and now we're in the red bib era, right? So we know what a red bib signifies in the fastest times. And if you look at the digit number, you know somebody has a really super fast qualifying time with a red bib. So it's a pretty easy thing to figure out or parse, like, okay, this runner's history type of deal. But in 1995, my first Boston, I run 2:46. And that's a really solid time for a 35-year-old runner. So, Matt, in the 100th Boston, I was in Corral 2 with a 2:46 time. If I ran 2:46 today at 35 years of age, I would have a bib of probably like, I don't know, 300 and something red bib, like maybe 400 at the most. It would be a very like low to mid-range number.
My friend Peter Bromka posted his bib today.
Yeah, yeah.
So he qualified with a sub 2:30, and yeah, he's number 2:56.
See? 2:50 and 2:30. So probably maybe more like 600 is where I probably would be, as I'm guessing, but it would be easy. You'll see everybody's going to be doing the bib numbers, but I was in Corral too, Matt. And not only was I not upset by that, I was just like, thank you, Lord, I'm running the 100th Boston Marathon and I'm in Corral too. But I'm looking around me and I'm like, these people are beasts. They're freaks. Like, do I belong here? A little bit of imposter syndrome. And the 100th, I run 2:41, which was my fastest Boston. There were 40,000 registered runners. The finisher number, I think, was about 37,000. And I finished 440th place or something. So it was crazy to finish that high. I mean, in that elite race, where the thing that made that race everything, Matt, was the most returning champions that ever ran in the Boston race came back to be part of that day, that experience, which was the pageantry of not just, it wasn't like an Olympics day. It was like 100th Olympic day. It was that much magnitude and emphasis was put on it. And, you know, it's a day I won't forget. But then, you know, after that, I have this long gap, this long break. I come back, I run lots of solid times, but I realize, you know, maybe I'm not going to ever run another 2:41 or a 2:47, but at 58, what I ran all six in a year for the first time in 2019, I averaged 3:15, but they were 1 minute apart, Matt. All these races, 2 weeks apart. So 3:17, 3:13, 3:15, 3:16, 3:17, 3:15. So to me, that spoke a lot to me showing up and being super consistent with my training and keeping my body healthy and handling a lot of mileage so that I could race Chicago and Berlin 2 weeks apart and run 30 seconds or 40 seconds apart at 58. Now, it may not sound like a big deal, but to all my younger friends that I talk to, they're like 35 or 40. Just wait till they're friggin' 18 years older, Matt. Let me tell you something, man. That would not be an easy thing to do at all.
I tell you, there's plenty of people who are listening to this right now who are in their prime years. And again, however you want to phrase that, but 3:15 would be a miracle day for them. So the fact that you averaged that over the course of six marathons in a calendar year is truly remarkable. And you said it's obviously built on, and I didn't have to hear you say this to know this, but you did mention it, built on the consistency of the mileage. And of course it has to be, right? So for you, what exactly does that mean in terms of, you know, when you are healthy and things are clicking at a fairly normal rate, not crazy, but also not super low? What does a typical week for you mean in terms of the amount of running you do, the mileage, and that sort of thing?
Yeah. So if we stick, that was 2019. And then I want to bridge past COVID, because you know how much our lives have changed. I mean, you're a dad, you got young kids, so now you're homeschooling, you're doing things that you didn't do. We're looking at each other on screens doing podcasts and being remote. That didn't exist at all. I could do business meetings with all my hospital and healthcare clients and not have to physically go there, or you could touch all these other people around the globe and have conversations. So those were the pluses. The minuses, we couldn't race. We couldn't train. So for me, I would say, you know, somewhere between mid-50s to mid-60s is always kind of been a stock mileage for me. And that is even when I'm not building for a Boston. I just like mileage. I like to run. I like hills. That's why I like running in the park. And when I needed to sharpen, I run for one of the greatest teams in the world, Central Park Track Club. I mean, I could just show up to one organized workout and chase crazy fast people and get drop kicked by everybody. You had Tammy on also. Tammy was super fun, right? Because you were there and you saw her across the line. I remember listening to the conversation and she had no idea if she had made it and she didn't make it and the whole thing. And I listened to that. Well, Tammy ran for us. And when she was on my show, it just made me laugh out loud. She was like, Ron, I didn't just get dropped. I got embarrassed. I got embarrassed beyond belief. I mean, I was literally like the slowest person there and by a mile. And she goes, and I remember you blown by me in workouts. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? But she was just like, she's just so fun and so like honest about how it was. And look at her now, just like totally crushing it. So for me, I've always been higher mileage strength kind of runner, which is why I've run Boston well, why I like New York. And we all have our like strengths and weaknesses as runners, and just like we do in life and in our career and what we do or what we bring to a relationship. The first and the most important thing, a really good friend of mine, Steve Sisson, terrific runner, coached at Texas, great podcaster, amazing coach, kind of like one of those mind guru types. Like one of the lines I stole from him a long time ago is, what does the race require? And it's literally one of the first things I would ask you. You're a coach. I'm not coaching anybody anymore. But if somebody says to me, hey, I'm going to run Sydney, the first thing I'm going to say to them is, hey, what does the race require? And what does that mean? You got to do your homework. What's the course profile? What's the weather going to be like? Even if you can't say for sure, is it going to be 50 to 80? Is it going to start at 6 a.m? You know, what's that going to feel like to you starting that early? Where are the hills? Are they early? Are they late? Because anybody could look at Boston's profile and go, oh, it's so net downhill. This is an easy course. Well, go run Boston and roll through those downhills. But you're also going back up all of the early parts. You're not just going down. You're going down and up, man. You're riding on like a little mini roller coaster.
Right. It's not a net downhill after the 6 mile mark.
Oh. Let me tell you something, man. Once you bomb down into Lower Newton Falls, it's just like, okay, party's on. Let's get started. You got to run across that freaking windblown damn bridge and the highway and the cars are sailing by and the hospital's off to the right. And I've heard Dez talk about this, about her being her least favorite part. I'm like, thanks for Dez. I love you because she always says shit that relates to me. I'm like, I've wanted to kill myself in that stretch of the race and it's nowhere near. You didn't even hit the firehouse yet, but it's enough where it's like, okay, it's going to be time to party. And then, of course, once you turn, you know, then you hit the chain of Newton Hills and it's all on. But for me, it's just being consistent. I think that's it. You know, people need to do a long run, even when they're not training for a marathon. The distance in that long run can change dramatically. And, you know, Peter's an amazing runner. You know, maybe he does 21 miles with his mates and they crank down crazy paces at some point. But when they're not in marathon season, that 21 miler might become 16, but it doesn't go to 10. It doesn't go to 12. They're still out there for 2 hours and they're burning and they're practicing taking their fuel and all those things. So consistency, if you want to be a good marathoner, you got to keep punching the clock. And well, we don't have time clocks anymore because I'm so fucking old. You know what a time clock is, but I don't know about anybody else on this show. Like we'd punch into work, you know, the old time card. But you got to do the work, man. Miles. No,
I know what you're talking about. I've seen the Flintstones. I've seen it.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it. I feel like I could have been on that show. I've been around so long.
Well, let's talk about the mileage part, right? So again, I want to put caveats in there because people have different times in their life. You had your own. You had a 9-year period where your running life looked very different based on family and work obligations. So you were time crunched, right? So assuming that people can, right? So we're going to make this assumption. Assuming that people can have the time for them to be in the 50, maybe even the low 60 mile range, right? Why is that important? Because I think some people will gravitate towards some of the lower mileage. It's like, hey, this, I've reached the minimums, or hey, I've seen that, like, what's the least amount I have to do for this? But then they also have goals, right? So for you, again, with the assumption is that someone has the time to do this, why is being in that range more valuable and ultimately more beneficial than, say, being in like the 38 to 44 range?
I think as you build as a runner, and it's over years, and it's season after season, it's cycle after cycle, and your body has to be able to handle it, Matt. No one can know that but you, that individual runner. They have to know how much they're managing or micromanaging, and are they getting on a table? Is somebody working on them? Are they getting enough fluids in? Are they foam rolling? Are they doing the basic things they need to do to stay healthy and maybe throwing in some strength work? But for the real adaptations to occur that you need, you know, to me, on like the vascular level, you know, all the little micro things that have to happen with muscles, ligament, blood flow, all the really, really key things that happen over time happen because your pathways are opening. Like there's more capillary development. There's just, you know, from a physiology standpoint, somebody with a lot more, you know, basic medical knowledge and PhD information, there's a million people out there that'll spout that stuff, but it's real. You may not look down at your calves or your ankles and go, oh, I've got more capillary development now, but it's just at some point, paces become easier. Your resting heart rate gets lower. You know, I can do runs, you know, on an 80, 90 degree day at like 105 heart rate with a chest drop heart monitor. Like not slow, like pretty good quality runs, not marathon pace, not fast, not a tempo run, but that's 105 beats a minute. And so your body will make major changes over time. The heart muscle, right? Don't forget, man, it's a muscle, okay? It builds up. Your left ventricle gets stronger. It can pump the blood faster and further to the heart and get to everywhere it needs to get to, whether it's a hot day or a cold day. Those are benefits for you. But at the end of the day, the person's body's got to be able to take it. They got to be fueling enough, eating enough, not trying to fast and not eat one meal a day because they're trying to get to some crazy low weight. Because as we all know, those things are going to lead to a bad end for somebody. You got to stay healthy. You got to fuel right, not just on your runs, but you got to eat, man. You got to get good calories in, eat healthy. Whether I don't care if you want plant-based meat, whatever you want to eat, you just got to make sure you're eating enough calories to be able to maintain and, you know, make sure the body's together. And the most important caveat of all, and you know, this is like 20% rules. You don't increase your mileage by, you know, more than like 10% in a week at a time. And you don't increase your long run by more than like 10%, maybe 12%. If somebody's a really solid runner with history, but you don't go from 10 to a 20 mile long run. You know, you don't go from 50 miles to 100, you know, you have to take things in small dips. And then, and I think most people don't do this well, you know, as you're building up, you might do 3 up weeks, take a down week. And that down week should be a big drop. Maybe you're going from 65 or 70. You go back to 35 or 40 in that week and you really give your body a chance to reset. It doesn't mean you sit on your couch the whole week. You know, maybe you do some elliptical that week. Maybe you go in the pool and swim, or maybe you ride a bike or a stationary bike just to keep some stuff going on. But the less pounding on those legs for like 1 week, and then you get back to it and it's like, okay, I'm ready to roll.
I like that. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, because something that has really stuck with me, and it's not something that I've been able to put into my own training, and this isn't about me, so I'm not going to get into the reasons why or whatever. But one of the best masters runners out there, Ken Rideout, has talked about one of the things that brought and elevated him as a runner. Again, this is someone who is incredibly talented, no matter what he says. He's incredibly Beast. Talented. Beast. He qualified for Kona very early on, despite not having a running, swimming, or bike background, and still qualified for Kona, right? So he's an incredibly talented athlete. With that said, he said that his running really went to the next level when he was running 10 miles a day. And if you extrapolate that out, that's the same kind of miles that we're talking about here. So did you have that same sort of realization at some point for you? And like, how do you view like the daily easy run in terms of like the normal mileage range that you like to set out for?
I think that's a really good analogy for me personally, because during COVID, and obviously everybody remembers, I should say everybody, not everybody, but almost everyone that we would know the Tommy Rives story. And so during COVID, when there was no racing, I wanted to do some things differently. And I know Ken's story. I don't know it that well, but I've listened to him on a bunch of shows and he's terrific on shows. And I love how he approaches it, man. The dude is like fierce mental. He's won his age group at a number of like world marathon majors, like going up to Tokyo and places like that and coming first in your age group, that is no small feat, Matt. That is like impressive people. I mean, the first year of the London World Age Group Marathon Champs in 2021, the guy ran, pretty sure he ran sub 230, the guy who won it. This is before Ken was involved. At least he wasn't a person that I knew at that point. This guy was from Ireland. Maybe he was a past Olympian and had been away from running and stuff like that. So I think, At some point, we'll have a stock route that we run wherever we live. It doesn't matter if it's on road, if it's on grass, is it in a park, wherever it is, or maybe you run on the treadmill or you're running with a group. So somewhere along the way, that number becomes a number. It's a 6 mile loop. It's an 8 mile loop. It's this. And most people will tell you to vary your mileages, and they're right. And most elites, as you know, they're running two days a week, more days than they're running 1 day a week. So it is very different for them. They might run 6 in the morning, but then they might run 10 or 12 at night with speed work in there. Or they might do it the other way. They might do the fast stuff in the morning on Lake Mary Road or something, and then the stuff at night is just literally cruising pace, like 9:30 or 10-minute pace that you and I could be rolling with and be like, hey, man, we're running with Dez. We got this shit. We're cool. So I think for me, I just gravitate to longer distances. I love it. So like 10 miles for me, very similar to Ken. I don't know why. There's something about, I like to say it's a double digit run. I don't know why. I have no idea why. If that number was 20, I wouldn't keep running to get to 20. But, you know, if I'm at 7 miles on a run, I'll be like, I'll do another 2 miles, or I'll do one more mile, then I'll do a 2 mile cool down. Like, I don't know. I just make it up in my head. We all do, because I'm not writing a real training program anymore, Matt. I'm just kind of rolling with it. But I found during COVID, like, I needed something to engage me. And so I did a lot of charity stuff during COVID. I ran 10 marathons in 10 weeks for frontline healthcare workers and raised a ton of money and delivered meals to people. That's the industry I work in. So these people, to just get some recognition after working their asses off and being in the line of fire every day and not even knowing if they were going to make it home and working shift after shift after shift. It was such a simple thing I could do to feel like I wasn't helpless, you know, living alone with my dog, like something that I could do with my son living in Vermont. Like, can I help out in some way? So I did it and it felt amazing. And then when Rives got sick, and the part about people don't understand about my story is I never met Tommy Rives. I didn't know him at all. I followed him because he read, you know, serious authors and would quote Mary Shelley and all kinds of other people. I'm like, oh, this dude's cool. He's intellectual. He's a runner. But when I caught his wife Steph's writing, I was like, I want to do something. So on my 60th birthday, I ran 60 miles for Rives and I raised a lot of money for Rives. But I'm segueing into that because Ken was running 10 miles a day. I decided to get ready for the 60 mile run in the middle of winter. I was going to run 15 miles every day. So in January, because remember, Dez had Deztober, which was genius, that she made up with Brooks, where it was you run 1 mile on the first day, 2 miles, and then it built. So you get to the end of the month, you're running 20 miles that day, 21 the next, 22. So Dez came up with, I don't know, it was 400 and some odd number mile. So I decided if I ran 15 miles a day in a 31-day month, I could beat her mileage amount, and she would know of Tommy Rives. Maybe I could get her to donate something from Boston or some cool item that I could auction and help him get more money. And, you know, I didn't quite get to the mileage a couple of days before. I took a fall on the hard ice and snow and my knee got really swollen. And ugh. I was like, all my friends were like, don't do it, dude. Don't run the 60 miles. It's going to be below zero wind chill. Put it off. Run it when the weather's warmer. Nope. I ran it in the freezing cold. And I did it. And, you know, Matt, to get to meet Rives in real life, like, good Lord, everybody in the world's asked him to come on his show and tell the story. I just never even felt like that was my place. Like, he knows me now. And if he ever wanted to say, hey, let's have a chat someday, that would be like the honor of a life to have the chat or maybe do some kind of event with him at a sneaker store at a race. But to meet him in real life in New York a couple of years ago, and then he finished Boston literally right behind me last year, and we saw each other and hugged and took a bunch of pictures and hung out. One of the greatest things ever. So that kind of changed a lot of stuff for me. And since then, I haven't really been able to get my racing back to where I was in 2019. And, you know, I battled celiac bone density issues and things that are real. I mean, look, you have a lot of great stories on your show. You're talking to so many people, whether it's a PT person doing strength or a mental coach. But, you know, we know a lot of people that do sports nutrition, but just because they have a degree in sports nutrition doesn't mean they really understand celiac specifically. To me, I got to find like a true expert in that area. So for me, it's been a challenge like the last like 2 years with some of these bone density issues and getting stress fractures, which I've never had a bone injury in 35 years of running. And now I've had a couple in the last like 2 years. So I'm trying my best to keep change the supplement and Prevnix all the way back to you. You had turned me on to them when I first started my podcast. So they've been sponsoring me, but even though they're great and the products are great, you still have to get the right amount, like how much can you absorb versus me, because I have celiac, is very different, right? Compared to your kid, if you gave it to your kid or your wife, like we're all going to absorb the same supplement differently. And your vitamin D level is going to be here, and my calcium level is going to be there, and somebody else's is going to be like up there. So that's been a little tricky for me to navigate lately. But, you know, when your motto is stay in the fight, man, you can't give up. You got to keep going and stay in it. And, you know, I just love this racing so much. I don't want to miss out on it.
Before we get going, you've been so generous with your time, and I really appreciate it. It's always such a blast talking to you, Ron. I just want to talk real quick about what your impressions are of the growing exposure that we're seeing for masters athletes. Again, not just for, you know, the common runner, you know, someone like myself, but even like, I think there's two versions of this, right? There's the Ken Rideout, what he's doing and how much publicity he's getting, and understandably so, and rightfully so. The guy is an absolute beast, and he's, you know, the best in the world at what he does, which is really incredible. At the same time, he's 58 years old, right? In the past, we didn't hear about people like that. And I think that the media landscape has shifted in a way to really allow people to get more access to things that they're interested in. And for some people, this is a story that really connects, even for 20-somethings, right? And again, we're also seeing it in a very different way. But from a genre perspective, it's similar in terms, I mean, just because the ages is, say, like the female masters runners that are coming up right now. Sarah Hall is like, I don't care about masters records. I'm here to win. I'm here to go to the Olympics. Right. So like,
yes,
again, and that's not a shot at masters athletes in any way, shape or form. Like that's just the reality of the situation. But, you know, your good friend, Roberta Groner, Kira D'Amato is going to be masters athlete very soon. There's a genre, and there's a million others. I'm not going to list all the names. This question's already long enough. But with all of that being said, it really does seem like there is a light that's shining much broader than it used to on a certain spectrum of athletes. And it doesn't seem like it's going away. And I'd love to just get your take on that as someone who has been a part of the running scene for a very long time and has aged into that cohort.
I think it's super exciting to see. And, you know, Sarah is a remarkable athlete. You just see the grittiness of the way she competes in the trials, and you saw how she fought to the end of that race and didn't end up, you know, in a podium spot, but just, you know, she's just so gracious. She's such an amazing competitor. She's battled more than her share of injuries, you know, trying to stay healthy. But when she's on and she's healthy, she's 100% a danger to win those races. We've seen what kind of performances Kira has put out and across, you know, many different type of courses and different distances. She just made the Olympic standard 10,000 meters on the track, like amazing, running against track runners. But Roberta, you nailed it. I mean, she could not be one of my favorites. She is one of my favorites, but she's one of so many people's favorites because she's just so humble. And she's just an incredible competitor. And she set a ton of age group records this year at all sorts of distances. And if you look at it, you know, Dina was an amazing, like, kind of beacon for them to shoot for. I think Dina's one who doesn't get anywhere near enough attention put on her. And maybe it's just my opinion because I think she should get more attention. Her running resume is, like, on a par with almost no one. And she's the one that set those times that the Sarahs of the world, that the Robertas of the world are trying to kind of check off. And you're right. I agree with you. Sarah's not looking at it from that perspective. Roberta would certainly be more looking at that because although she's an amazing runner and is running in the pro fields, you know, there is a little bit of a difference there between their like resumes enough so that, you know, I could see where Sarah's approach to it would be different. But man, it's super exciting. And it's crazy. And what I really love about it is I think that these brands have to realize just how much power there is in those athletes' stories, you know, people that are like that are willing to stay in the sport and to keep competing and to stay after it. A lot of people will only want to go out when they're on top. If they're a professional golfer and they're not shooting 10 under or 20 under and they're not winning tournaments anymore, hey, I'm out, you know, or maybe I'll play the senior tour, maybe not. I don't want to mess with my record. Running, one thing will happen to all of us, Matt. We're going to get slower. It's a given fact. Even Ken Rideout will, even Sarah will, even Roberta will. They all will. It's just a matter of how long can you hold that off? How much can you get out of yourself? It's like wringing it out. What's that last little piece
I'll tell you what,
that I can find?
And the range obviously is growing, right? And I think that's really the part I want to touch on before we get going right now, is that I think watching these people do what they're doing, not only is it great for people like you and I who view them from an age perspective, it's like, hey, age-wise, we're peers. We may not be peers in any other way, but age-wise, yes, we are. At the same time, I think it also, for the 28-year-old who, like, again, we were 28 once and we were like, oh my God, I'm almost 30 and it feels like this existential crisis. I think they can look at me like, oh, wait, hold on a second. Yes, again, the big round numbers, they all can have meaning, but they have the meaning that we put on them. But you also look at me like, hold on a second. Sarah Hall just got fourth at the trials, and she's 13 years older than me. Again, I might not be able to do that, but like, what am I worried about here? Like, what am I actually worried about here? And I think that seeing that long tail, I think allows people of any age to really embrace the process in a way that doesn't feel like time is compressed upon itself and all of a sudden everything has to happen now or else.
Yeah, I mean, it's so well said. If it doesn't fire you up, I don't know that there's anything more exciting than the Olympic Trials marathon. It's honestly, I love to watch 10,000 meters. I love to watch a great half marathon. They're all exciting. And it's not as long a time maybe on the couch or wherever you're watching it, if you're on a treadmill. But damn, the excitement and the shifts in that race and, you know, the different people, you know, taken to the lead and really starting to push the pace. And, you know, you see people struggling with the heat and some of the men having trouble with their fluids and throwing up. Same thing with some of the women, some of them having to drop. It just is. It's so exciting, man. And the end of that race, man, I mean, it was just so cool to see Dakota, you know, just come through. I mean, it was just crazy. I mean, it was just amazing. And, you know, she manifested, man. She talked about it in her workout. She talked about, you know, going to Paris. And, you know, and I'm sure there were a lot of other people that were on that starting line that had those same kind of visions and thoughts. But only three, right, are going to actually get to have that day, you know, kind of come true for them in the end. But I think the more brands that realize the power of masters and older runners, I don't mean old, but just, you know, somebody over 40, you know, life is different. And anybody who says age is just a number, I'm like, I don't think so. Okay, let me tell you something. Age is a number. Age is real. And it gets harder. It gets harder to recover from an injury. It gets harder to recover from a hard workout. But if you love this sport as much as I do or any of those people do, it's a gift. And you realize, like, I am not going to give this up. I'm going to fight for this opportunity because there could be no better thing in the world for any of us to manage stress or any difficult things that we come across in our life or the best things. It isn't just the difficult things, man. It's the celebratory things, man. Your kid's going to get married or he's going to college or business school or he's starting a company. Like, what better way in life, Matt, than to lace up your damn sneakers and go out there and be like, I'm going to go run some miles, man, and just process what I'm feeling, man. God bless, right?
Ron, I love it. If people want to learn more about you or just want to interact with you, like, this has been so much fun for me to do, where can they go?
Ron Runs NYC is my main Insta page, of course, and that's usually where I host the IG live stuff about the major races, etc. And Run Chats with Ron Runs NYC is my second Insta page, and that's the name of my running podcast, which is on Apple, Spotify, and all the usual suspects. So yeah, please, man, give me a follow, hit me up, send me any questions you have on the majors. And Matt, thanks so much for having me back on to chat. It's always a blast, and one of these days we're gonna get to hook up in person, man. You know, maybe this year in Boston. We'll see.
I love it. Thanks a lot, Ron.
All right, man.